Tuesday. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah here in the Mobile Kintech studio, live from Rogers Arena, where the Canucks will take on the Calgary Flames tonight. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And of course, if you want to be a part of the program, you can. If you are listening live, 650-650 on the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. You can also reach us on X at DanRiccio underscore and at Sat Shaw. And of course, Satyar Shah. And also on where the sky is blue rather than gray.
Blue sky. Yes.
Well, we're allowed to say it on the radio, but on Twitter, I think you get like...
What, you get shadow banned?
Yeah.
Is that a thing, really?
That's why people are always subtly being like, oh, I'll be on the where the sky is blue. Right?
Or they post screenshots or something.
Wow. I didn't know.
Because the algo picks it up and it just like suppresses the tweet so you don't... The message doesn't get to your followers.
I thought the owner of Twitter was all about free speech. What's going on here? I got too political.
Can't escape it nowadays.
All right. Big one tonight. It is Jonathan Lekromaki's NHL debut. Let's get to the Open.
Welcome to the Open.
Mom! That's your home! Are you too good for your home? Answer me!
Yes, the Open, where we bring you the latest on the Vancouver Canucks and our take on it. Jonathan Lekromaki, the Canucks star rookie, set to make his NHL debut and begin his quest towards getting into the Calder Trophy conversation, as was yesterday's discussion on the program. I actually feel better about that take today, 24 hours later.
Really?
Than I did yesterday, because a lot of the Canuck Central listeners, while at first they were like, man, you are nuts, they have come around to the idea.
Yeah, actually.
Seeing that, like, the top five, like, to be a top five rookie scorer, you need 6 points right now. It's not crazy in the NHL. To meet Kovalenko, you know?
Be on the fringes.
Maxim Tsiplikov.
But, I mean, it's funny how, like, you have confidence after, like, not seeing anything. You know, yeah, it's like,
man, it's a rookie, you know? It's kind of the thing with rookies. They haven't played a game yet.
Right, that's kind of how. Well, I mean, some rookies, there's a limit to how many games, right?
Yes.
Like, you can still have, like, for instance, Stan Coben's a rookie.
Yeah.
But he played games last year, right?
We saw him play last year.
Right, just be a stickler for the detail.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I got called out. It was at Cal K. Lung on X.
Yeah.
He said, why is Sat such a... You know what, to Riccio. It's okay to have opinions like your Mackey potentially popping off. Stop bullying my guy. Glad Riccio stuck to his guns. So I've been accused of bullying you and being a bad... or being rude to you for laughing at the notion that Lekromaki. I mean, it's not even so much. Honestly, I just thought it was funny because you went from, hey, are they doing the right thing calling him up and not ruining the kid, to like, he's winning the Calder.
I didn't say he's winning the Calder. I just said I want to see him get into the conversation. I will say, though, Canuck Central, I don't know if this is really a thing, but it seems like we may have moved the betting odds.
Really?
On Jonathan Lekromaki.
What has it? Have they improved?
Like, when I looked yesterday, it was over 100-1.
Okay.
And I got a note from somebody today being like, now it's 75-1.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure a few bets went in yesterday.
Yeah.
Did you make a bet?
So we moved the line.
Still so low.
Well, I didn't say it was a guarantee. Of course, it's a long shot. Guys, come on now. I'm not that crazy.
Well, I mean, yeah. But yes, I mean, are we doing this again?
No,
no,
I think,
okay.
We're done with it. Although people have been not too pleased with my ranking of greatest Canuck rookie seasons of all time.
Yeah, I mean, the Burry one, you know. Again, I'm not saying, you know, all your takes have been bad the last time. I mean, it's not, you can make the argument for Patterson.
Yeah.
I agree. But Burry was just like insane.
Honestly, like, it's probably a... I mean, Burry's rookie season was insane, but I was, you know, I grew up not here in Toronto, as most people chirp me about still to this day.
and you're pretty young at the time, right?
Pretty young at the time. And when Burry came on the scene, it was like, holy smokes, this guy's unbelievable. And it's different the way I consumed it compared to Pettersson, where it's like I'm covering the team game in and game out, watching it with a critical eye, yeah. And like this guy comes over from Sweden and is just like obliterating goaltenders every single night and playing well at both ends of the rink, and I appreciate that more now than I did when I was younger. So it's like it's a different view of how I watched and consumed each player.
Yeah, I mean, and that's all fair. And I remember, when I was a kid, I became a Canucks fan in Sweden because of Pavel Bure. Yeah. Like, I watched Bure, and I was like what is this?
I became a Canucks fan in Toronto because
I remember being a kid and seeing it. I'm like, what is this guy? Like, he was unlike anybody else in the league. Like, he seemed like he was airdropped into the league for 20 years in the future. Like, that's what it seemed like, right? Because he was just a skating by guy. He had so much power. His game was... It's so new age. Yeah. When you watch the Bure highlights, he looks like a player that's playing the league now, doing stuff like Connor McDavid's pulling off, but he's, you know, half his size pretty much. But I just think what Bure showed early on was just unlike anything we had seen, right? But it's 1-2.
Yes.
Like, Bure's 1 and Pettersson is 2. So, I mean, it's, you know, for all the guff people are giving you, it's not like you're that far off.
They both won the Calder. So good discussion to have. We can continue to have it over the course of the program. 650. So we hear from Rick Tocchet today and a little bit of clarification on Brock Besser. And the Canucks will not confirm if it is a concussion. They won't confirm if he is in the concussion protocol. But I know you mentioned this yesterday on Halford and Brough. And it's more not day to day, but the Canucks continue to monitor to see how Brock is progressing on a day to day basis. And the way Rick Tocchet put it today is he 3% better each day? And that's kind of what they're hoping for.
Yeah. And the reality is when it comes to, you know, head injuries, and it hasn't been officially classified as a concussion, but based on how everybody's talking about it, it's pretty clear what's going on here. Right. And they don't have to come out and say the player is in concussion protocol either. Right. Like, they don't have to be upfront with us when it comes to injuries. Like, the league standard is such that they don't have to, and there's nothing to hold them to it. Right. So the info is what we get, you know, and so you can put two and two together here. I don't think that's, you know, unfair to do in this situation. But what do we know about those types of head injuries? Unpredictable.
Yeah.
You feel good today. You may not feel good tomorrow. You might feel good today and feel good the next day. And then the third day, all of a sudden, when you start moving around, you're not feeling as good.
Yeah.
So it's just so hard to really give a timeline on it. And considering how important he is to the team, and considering that he himself is also in a contract year, you're not rushing anything here, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're taking your time. And with that being the case, this is something that nobody's rushing into. And when you know you're not rushing into anything, you're at least a week away.
Yeah.
At least.
At least a week away.
At least a week away.
And then you get on a skate and see how you feel after that skate when you really start to get your heart rate up and those kinds of things.
So we're talking about, as far as now that he's been gone a few days and it kind of turns into a week, you're talking about something that's going to take at least 2 weeks from the time he feels better until you see him back again. So that's, I think, why you're hearing stuff about it's not going to be soon. It's not that he's not feeling better. It's not that he may not feel better. It's like when you take that much time off, you're dealing with a head injury.
Yeah.
Nobody's rushing into anything. And you start looking at a couple-week timeline potentially. And who knows? Could be longer, could be shorter. But just think of it logically. When you're out a week, it's going to take at least a week or two before you're back from a head injury.
Yeah. I mean, in the NFL, if a player gets a concussion, they go into the protocol, they're more often than not, like, for them to go through the steps to play the following week, it's very rare.
Yeah.
I can't even think of the last player that I've seen actually do it. It's almost like if you're diagnosed with a concussion, then you're at least out for a week, so which means in NFL terms, you're missing at least one game. We'll see you in 2 weeks' time.
So you're gone for at least 10 days,
right? And that's kind of, you know, the way, as you know, we've learned more about head injuries and still need to learn more, that's kind of the way that it has gone. But with Brock Besser out of the lineup, we see Lekkomäki come in, and he's taking that spot in the lineup for the time being. But is there somebody else? You're not going to replace Brock on his own, right? Like, one player, as much pressure as I've put on Jonathan Lekkomäki in the last 24 hours, if you want to call it that, one player is not going to replace
your 40-goal scorer in this lineup, your team's leading goal scorer. Brock is a huge part of this team. More often than not, if you are going to make up for a big injury loss like that, it has to be by committee. So Lekker Mäki's going to have to be a part of the team that helps paper over Brock's absence. But who else can take advantage of this opportunity?
Well, honestly, when you start looking at it, like, Suter's the guy that, you know, we joke about, you know, Swiss Army knife. And
yes, because he's Swiss.
Because he's Swiss, yes. Yeah. And the coach called him that as well, right? So, but this just solidifies kind of his spot up the lineup now. And what does that mean for a guy like Aturatu? Probably good things.
Yeah.
As long as you play well, you're probably not going anywhere. Dakota Joshua, we still have to see him come back from here. Hoglander's on the fourth line again.
Yeah.
This, how often have we spoke about Hoglander so glowingly after the first few games, and, like, you know, especially with Dakota Joshua out, here's an opportunity for him to really establish himself up the lineup.
Yeah.
He's on the fourth line, back and forth, right? Mm-hmm. So he's a guy that could, but at what point, like, it's kind of, we're back to show me again with him, and I like a lot of his game, but it's very clear the coach is still, this season, not fully convinced.
No, and last Wednesday when he got publicly called out by the coach saying didn't like his game, you know, it's been tough for Hoglander to get back up the lineup. So where are we at now? You know, I feel like the obvious one is Suter here. The Swiss Army knife is getting a spot on the top power play unit, at least for the time being, with Brock Besser out of the lineup. It wasn't, or didn't go straight to Jake DeBrusk like I thought it might. It's Pew Suter to begin with here, which is a little bit surprising, but he played in that spot last year, had a little bit of success. Maybe it's also, well, it's not necessarily a handedness thing because both he and Jake DeBrusk are left shots. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Suter is a guy that the coach really trusts and really understands. Like, this is a guy that does a lot of things well, even if he doesn't have one thing that he does truly elite. He's the Swiss Army knife that does a lot of things well because he's Swiss, of course. So it's like, for me, aside from Lekker Mäki, it feels as though Pew Suter's spot is really big, and for him in a contract year as well. I mean, he's in a really prime spot to grow his worth for his next contract.
Yeah, I mean, you're so right about the contract year stuff. And when we started to talk about last year and this year for the Canucks and how many players had, you know, career seasons, Suter's a guy that had a lot of motivation.
Yeah,
1 year into playing in Vancouver, and for all the talk about guys who've gotten better here and been able to find another level here, we saw with Dakota Joshua, we're seeing with some other players, Suter's are now year two here.
Yeah.
What do we see from Dakota Joshua in year two in Vancouver? A significantly better hockey player, right? Now, Suter's already shown that he can be more than serviceable in Chicago and with the Red Wings, so we know he's capable of doing so. But might we see the best of him at the perfect time for the team? And it, he might, honestly, like, we had the conversation earlier this week about, or a couple weeks ago, about what it would look like if the Canucks sign Besser and Lankinen. Can you sign both those guys? And it's like, the answer is yes, you can sign both those guys, but you can't do anything else.
Yeah.
Like, you're done. You're capped
stuck.
Out.
Yeah. You're looking at, like, league minimum contracts, ELCs as guys that you're adding to the roster beyond that.
And if Suter has a good year, so who knows if he's going to be here beyond this season, but this is a massive opportunity for him to really set himself up. I mean, can he get, you know, one big contract, you know, is all relative term, but can he get a 3-4 year deal somewhere and take home $10 million, and then you talk about a very successful career? And these guys are very motivated by these things, especially as they start nearing their 30s, and, you know, how many more chances is he going to have, right?
Yeah.
And you see a player who's highly motivated
to lock in maybe, you know, a double digit kind of contract, 10, 12 million. If you are Pew Suter. The other player is probably Kiefer Sherwood. Now, I know it's the untouchables line. You know, you can't move off Bluger, Heinen, and Sherwood.
I'm with you.
The untouchables, the only line that is intact over the last couple of weeks for the Canucks, and for good reason. Mm-hmm. You know, they've been good. They've been solid. There's something that Rick Tocchet can trust. But a right winger comes out of the lineup in Brock Besser. Sherwood's been off to a great start. He's shown a lot of different elements to his game. We saw him get some opportunities in preseason with Pettersson. Do we see Kiefer Sherwood get another opportunity up the lineup. I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, even if it is not Tockett's first choice to break up that untouchables line.
Yeah, and because when you get Dakota Joshua back, you do have, especially if you want to keep Lekromaki around, like something's going to have to give somewhere.
Yeah.
At some point. And do you give Dakota Joshua a chance playing alongside Bluger again, for instance? And does that move Heinen off? So I think that could change the discussion a little bit. So I don't disagree with you on it. But I do think that the biggest thing that they can have as far as their benefit goes is the biggest issue I have with the lack of offensive push is moving a guy who's really settled well. Like, for instance, Sherwood's come in and he was a fourth liner all of last year, right?
Yeah.
And I like a lot of his game. As we know, I predicted 72 goals or whatever it was,
yeah,
right? Like,
I
it changes
mean,
all
I
the time.
I thought it was 86.
Yeah, right? It keeps changing. But we talked about, okay, I can see him get a chance play up the lineup, but ultimately, do you also want to mess too much with something a player is having a lot of success in doing already and
right.
becoming like the Yannick Hansen type of player? But I'm with you. I think at some point here, we're going to see him get a chance up the lineup. I just don't know if he's ultimately going to be talented enough to really mesh with those guys. But
it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And I think it more becomes a conversation once Dakota Joshua gets back in the lineup and maybe gets a game or two in to really maybe find himself, get his feet wet, and then move up the lineup and maybe get put back with Garland, because we know Tockett trusts that quite a bit. So does that change your lineup in any kind of way, or is it just Joshua, Pettersson, Garland, and that's what they try out of the gate or early on when Dakota Joshua's back? There's a lot of possibilities here.
Yeah, and the other guy, too, is Connor Garland. Like, Garland, since Besser's gone out, is, like, you know,
yeah,
he's playing
he's
even
right
more.
He's right there with Besser as the most Canucks' most consistent forward.
Yeah, and right now he's being leaned on even more. And this is going to be interesting with Lekromaki. Is Lekromaki going to be good enough that the coach is going to allow him to play, say, 14, 15 minutes? Or is he going to essentially shovel a lot of those minutes over to Connor Garland in bigger spots?
Much like we've seen Garland play up around 20 minutes these last few games. All right, a couple of things to get to here. A trade in the NHL. Lars Eller is headed back to the Washington Capitals away from the Pittsburgh Penguins. They wanted to switch things up after getting their you-know-whats handed to them last night. 7-1 they lose to the Dallas Stars. Lars Eller traded for a couple of draft picks today back to Washington. There was a report out of Pittsburgh that everybody except Crosby is on the table for the Penguins. Earlier this week on Monday from Elliot Friedman on 32 Thoughts, he wondered if the Montreal Canadiens' best course of action this season is to just punt and tank for James Higgins, who is the projected number one overall pick in the next upcoming draft. It seems as though the trade market, while obviously not developed here in November, is starting to form a little bit, Sat, and we're getting some intel on who could be available.
Yeah, and we're seeing, you know, teams position themselves. And, you know, my initial question was, when the trade happened, any new injuries for the Capitals here?
Yeah.
But we know that, obviously, TJ Oshie, he's been out, and Backstrom is out, and they have a lot of LTIR space, and even Sonny Milano's out. But it just seemed like they got ahead of the market and just got a third-line center they feel like can help. And it wasn't a cheap price, necessarily. It's a fifth-round pick this year and a future third, but that's two draft picks.
Yeah.
It's not a bad return for a third-line type of center for Pittsburgh, you know, where they're sitting at. But they have the LTIR space to make this move. They don't have to wait until the trade deadline to go out and make more moves. So I'm reluctant to say that this trade signifies more trades are going to happen. But I think you're right that we're seeing now very clearly who the sellers are going to be and how teams are positioning themselves.
Capitals with over or close to $15 million in LTIR space with Backstrom and Oshie on LTI. And you know, Montreal, they got the win yesterday over the Buffalo Sabres. But, yeah, it is going to be a tough season for them. And I don't know how many guys are potentially going to eventually be available from that squad. Christian Dvorak's going to be an interesting name. We know Josh Anderson's name constantly comes up because of the size-speed profile that I think is not seen often enough to take on a $5.5 million contract that still has 2 years of term left beyond this one. But on defense, you know, they do have some young defensemen coming and developing. not only do they have David Savard, but a name known well in this market, Mike Matheson, and one that this front office knows very well from their days in Pittsburgh.
I know Canucks fans obviously do not like Matheson, and for good reason, body-slamming Patterson in his rookie season and giving him a concussion. Obviously, that would necessitate some level of smoothing over. Remember, Patterson got his revenge in overtime when he stole the puck from him and scored. Remember that when the Habs came in town? I think it was the following year or whatever it was. But nonetheless, a lot of the time has passed since then, and I think Matheson would be a really good fit on this team. He moves the puck well, very good defensively. He can play both sides if need be, but he is obviously a lefty defensive, predominantly plays the left side. With Derek Forbort's situation, with a lot of pressure being put on Carson Soucy, I would not mind seeing a left-hand defenseman come in if that's the best you can get. And he's a legitimate top four guy. Like, he's a second-pair legitimate top four defenseman.
He's played as their number one guy the last couple of years, really.
Yeah, and obviously played more than he should, but he's a really good defenseman. And you're right about this front office in Pittsburgh liking him. They acquired him, and I think they gave him a contract, too. Yeah. So I think they've been, you know, obviously keen on his player.
Well, they took on the big contract that he got in Florida.
Right, he got the Florida. They took it on early in the contract. People kind of wonder, what are they doing? And then he really found his game in Pittsburgh, and obviously has been even better with the Montreal Canadiens. But he's a player that, to me, makes a lot of sense. I don't know what the price of acquisition is going to be. I'd imagine it's a lot because he is their number one defenseman. He has one more year left on his contract. And the contract's not onerous.
Yeah.
It's under $5 million. Just what is the price going to be for him? But he might end up being one of the best defensemen on the market, especially with the year of control, which makes it a little easier if you're trading for him and giving up a lot because you're getting him for 2 years.
The front office, Jim Rutherford, when he was general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, traded for Mike Matheson and sent Colton Seaver and sent Patrick Hornqvist over to the Florida Panthers in exchange for Mike Matheson and Colton Seaver in 2020, just before the lockout or lockdowns happened in March of 2020. So Mike Matheson, an interesting name. Again, starting to see the trade market develop, especially in the Eastern Conference, where if you've dug yourself a hole early, good luck getting out of it because the East is just treacherous at the top, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's so tough. And the thing, though, with Montreal, I know that there's a lot of talk about the rebuild, but unless they start trading guys like Matheson and some of their higher, they're probably going to win some games, too.
Yep.
And is this the time for them to move those players out? Like the Canucks, for instance, they can't trade for Matheson right now unless they move significant money off their books.
Yeah, or include some money in a trade like that. This is something that's going to develop over the season still.
Yeah.
You know, and when you get closer to February and the trade deadline, we'll see what exactly happens. All right, going to get to a couple more things. Canucks Central Roundup. Lankinen starting tonight against Calgary. It's Calgary's fifth game in eight nights in five different cities. They played last night against the LA Kings. Won 3-1, where Ryan Huska praised their commitment to playing the right way. We'll see if that continues tonight against Vancouver. Arshdeep Bains back up from Abbotsford. He will be in the lineup tonight, playing alongside Atu Ratu and Nils Höglander. So those are a couple of the notes for tonight's matchup against the Calgary Flames. Up next, Tim Graham, the Athletic Buffalo, is going to join us. Had a fascinating read on Alex McGillney, somebody that a lot of people, myself included, have thought Alex McGillney is a slam dunk Hall of Famer. And while Tim Graham believes Almo should be in the Hall, he provides reasoning and some in-depth reporting as to why that hasn't yet happened. We'll get to that next with Tim Graham of the Athletic Buffalo on Canucks Central.